Are we there? Are we on? Let's see. I didn't hear the introduction. Maybe we are, maybe we aren't. Let's see.
Once again, Chicago is making national headlines for all the wrong reasons. New York Times.
All right, folks, welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Something happened to the introduction. Anyway, we are on the air. Let's see if we can find it. Usually I keep it in here somewhere. Let's see. It didn't, or did I miss it? Who knows? I could have slept it. But anyway, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. And this is what you probably should have heard when you first tuned in.
Ladies and gentlemen, the George Wilder Jr. Show has now arrived.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
Now, this is the way it was supposed to start off, but it didn't happen that way. So we'll just have to figure it out what's going on. Once the show is podcast, we'll check it out and see if there were any problems at the beginning. But you know what I want to talk about, folks? And my guest is Mary Shores. She's a motivational speaker. She should be hopefully be on later on in the show. But this is International Women's Day. And a lot of women have been out in the streets taking off work, and some women just could not take off work, you know, but the ones that could did. And this was National Women's Day, and I want to applaud that. I think more than anything, the women out there showing that they are very vital to the economy and to the sustainability of America, which I totally agree. And I think one of the reasons why they were out there because of Trump, because of his sexism. I mean, this guy was something else. And, you know, they know all about Trump and his sexual harassment. I mean, it's been noted all over the place. And they're out there saying, hey, Mr. Trump, we are important. We are vital. And they are. For one of the things, for one reason, there are more women out here than men. Let me do this right quick. Yeah, there are more women than there are men. And, you know, this is a serious issue. Be right back. Getting back on this International Women's Day, I think this is good. I think women should come out maybe every 6 months or every year and do this to let the billionaires and millionaires know in Washington, D.C. that they are working, they're middle class, and they're not going to sit back and take it. You know, and I feel great about that because there's no doubt about it, folks. I mean, we've all heard that there are more women on Earth than men. Women live longer than men. That, you know, actually, that doesn't have to be if men took care of themselves a lot better. That's what I think. All right. 347-857-1762. And because I'm going to talk about one in three people around America, United States, exercises. Okay, but the Women's March, this reminds me of the Women's March a few weeks ago protesting Donald Trump. It was all over the world, all over the world. And a day, the International Day for Women's March, you know, was just as good, if not better, sending a message to these clowns that we have in Washington, D.C., in the Oval Office, in Congress. I'm pretty sure they probably turned a blind eye to it and made up all kinds of excuses because of it. And you got some of these Republicans in office who are probably downplaying it like it's nothing. They should be arrested and all of this kind of thing, or ran over, you know, because a lot of these people, a lot of these Republicans in offices, right, who think this way are nothing but bone-faced cowards. They are cowards to the core because they got to hide behind their offices. They got to hide behind a computer. They got to hide behind the Oval Office or Congress and say these things. They're not going to come out and say them in front of your face, you know, that this is a waste of time. You should be ran over because you're marching or you're protesting. You probably heard that. But a lot of these people are just bone cowards. You know, you take them out of that office. You take them away from Washington, D.C., get them in a setting with real people, and you will see how much of cowards these people are. I'm talking about senators and representatives and all of these people who are out here trying to make it even harder for the middle class, the working people, the poor, you know, so. This Women's March is another example. At least it's getting their attention, if nothing else. It's getting their attention, saying that women are vital to this economy. Women are vital to every crevice and corner of America. And I think it worked. I mean, you know, even Donald Trump said something nice about the Women's March today. But how? But they wasn't having it. They didn't. They said, the hell with you, Donald Trump. You want to grab me by my private part, don't you? You know, I mean, it's refreshing because a few years ago, I mean, I've had several jobs where my manager and my supervisors were women. Yeah, I've hardly ever had any managers who weren't women or supervisors who weren't women. And, you know, sexy women at that. But But it's women are vital in the workplace. I think women are running, are keeping America afloat in some of these companies and organizations and even corporations where there's no men. Where there's no men, and women are vital. Women are running the country. I mean, you walk into any company, and more likely the boss is a woman, you know, more so than a man. You've got some men bosses, I mean, managers, supervisors. Yeah, I've worked for some of those too, but I think I fared better when I had a female boss. And there was a debate on that on some other show that the caller would call into the show and the host would ask the caller, which would you prefer to work for, a man or a woman? You know, they had various responses and everything, but, you know, I'm pretty sure most people would probably say a woman, you know. Then I understand that some women actually do not like working with other women. You know, it's like they're competing or something with each other. That's not kosher for a woman to want to work for another woman, or a man to want to work for another man. You know, there's various responses from that, and you can debate it all you want. But, you know, I mean, I guess what I'm saying or trying to say, women, once again, are vital to the economy. Women are vital to the U.S., to the United States staying afloat. There's more women in the world than there are men. Men die sooner than women. Women whine. Most of the time, a woman ends up taking care of her man. Yeah, I've seen it. I still see it today. Women are taking care of their husband or boyfriend because there's something wrong, you know, and that's great. That's wonderful. And I want to congratulate. I don't have any clip to play on that, but maybe we'll have something by tomorrow if everything's all right, if we don't have any technical difficulties on the show. Yeah, so I want to congratulate all those women out there who have gone out there to march for International Women's March. I think that's what they called it. I believe that's what they called it. But anyway, you know what I'm talking about. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. It's 6:12 p.m. Chicago time. It's about 54 degrees out here, folks. The weather is still uncharacteristic because it is early March 2017, and we're having spring-like weather in the city of Chicago. I'm hearing it's supposed to get colder as the week goes on. They always say that it's supposed to get colder. I have yet to see it or to feel it, you know, but I'm pretty sure I'm on the north side of the city. So, you know, further west and further south, it might be a little warmer. I say that because I'm staying near the lake and it's always cooler near the lake. That air blows off the lake because the lake is cold. It stays cold. And that cold air blows off the lake on up to where I am. So that's why it's cooler by the lake. And probably a lot, but anyway, it's springtime. And I mean, it feels like it's springtime, but it's winter. And I believe daylight saving time is coming up, folks. The days are going to get longer. Yay! I am so I'm crazy about that. I love it when days are longer. You know, it just feels so good. When daylight savings come, March, daylight savings comes along, you know summer is right around the corner because the days are even going to get longer, you know, creeping up to summer. And daylight savings times is from the date of this show, it's on the 12th of March, 2017. And that's wonderful. I love it. I love it. You can stay outside a little longer. You know, things, you can have a little more time left. But you're going to lose an hour of sleep. Do we lose or do we gain? All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, 347-857-1762. My guest is Mary Shores, motivational speaker. We'll see what she's talking about. Hopefully, we can learn something from that. I always learn something from my guests. And that's the way it's supposed to be. Yeah, Women's Day, International Women's Day, March. Okay, it's a day without women. Yeah, thanks for that. A day without women. And also they're talking about computer hacking. They're saying, if I can get this right, they're saying that some of these cyber criminals, the World Wide Web, I never hear that anymore, the World Wide Web. You always hear cyberspace or internet, online. I guess the phrase World Wide Web has had its day or something like that. But anyway, they're talking about computer hacking. And from these cyber criminals, they can be coming from all over the world, Russia, China, anywhere. So they're talking about that. And I wanted to say something about it on the show. Anything that you have that will enable you to get online can be hacked. But some of the things they're saying are scary, that your smart TV can be hacked, can be hacked, your iPhone can be hacked, if you have a state-of-the-art car or vehicle, it can be hacked. I think I talked about this the other night, where if you're in your car, the hacker, the criminal can slow your car down, speed it up, can make it stop or even crash. And that's scary. And this is happening. This is totally happening. So you can have your iPhone. They will hack into that. They can put a virus on it and cut it off, slow it down. These guys are sophisticated. And the computers that we have here, I suggested that most of the stuff that we have here in my studio here are laptops. And as you know, if you have a laptop, if you own a laptop, you know that there's a little camera on it that's facing you. When you open it up, there's a camera right there. And hearing all of this bad news about how they can hack into your computers and cut on your camera phone, on your computer, laptop computer, I had to put some tape over that eye, the computer camera eye. I put tape over it, white tape. So I don't want nobody, taping me unauthorized. I don't mind being taped, but let me know. Don't do it while I'm not suspecting it or do not want it. So with all the hacking, you have to protect yourself. People are trying to get in your business. They can cut on your computers, see what you're doing. Moreover, they can hear the conversation that you might be holding with whoever is in your house. But you got to be careful. Some people like to talk to themselves if they're in their house alone. A lot of people talk to themselves. They admit it. They admit it. Sometimes I do. We all do. We all have that moment in time where we just talk. I always say it's thinking out loud. A lot of people say, "Wow, he's crazy. He's talking to himself." But you can't really tell if somebody's talking to themselves today, because if you may think somebody's talking to themselves, but actually they're on the phone, they're on the phone, but you don't see the phone, you don't see anything, but they're talking, but they may be on a phone that doesn't have a standard earphone set where you can see the wires and stuff like that, but it with today's technology, that don't have to happen anymore. So a lot of people who seem to be talking to themselves are actually on the phone, especially when you walk into the store or going to the McDonald's or somewhere, or shopping, or just out and about to the park. You see people walking around by themselves talking, but they're actually on their phones. Speaking about this, doesn't it annoy you if you're catching the train or you're on a public transportation, either bus or L or train, subway, and these annoying people are on there talking loud on their phones? That's just ridiculous. They be talking really loud on their phones, and they sound so uneducated, so stupid, so dumb. And they're letting everybody know how crazy they are by talking very, very loud on their phones. Some of them can't help it because that's the kind of people that they are. Wow. How did I digress this far? Anyway, I was talking about the Women's Day March, Women's International Day March, which I think was positive. I think it sent the right message. And we just got through talking about computer hacking. You know, watch your computer. If you have a laptop like me or other people, cover up that camera eye, because these people can turn on your computers without you being around, without you ever being there. And they can actually watch what you're doing in your own home. Some people will say just cut the computer off and close it. You know, don't leave the laptop open, just shut it down. And but a lot of us don't do that. We leave our laptops up. But if you leave your laptops up, make sure you cover that camera eye, because we got spies. There are spies all over the place. They hacking all over the place. And the government can't seem to do anything about it. The only thing the government seem to do about hacking is just talk about it. You know, they talk about it. All righty. You've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We're going to take a break right here. We are going to take what kind of break? We're going to take a musical break, because we don't really have any commercials. I can put a commercial up here. I can do commercials and stuff like that. Let me do Denver again.
This is Chicago's finest internet radio show, making a world a better place, one show at a time. The George Wilder Jr. Show is now on the air. Take it away, Dad.
A lot of stories on family, and we know families with loved ones in the nursing home often.
All right, scientists identify first sign of Alzheimer's disease. You know, the disease that take your memory as you get older. The only thing that's gonna, you know, I'm not disputing this or anything. I'm not gonna read the article or anything. I'm just gonna come out and say it, that one of the ways that you can keep your memory as you grow older and not suffer with dementia that leads to Alzheimer's is their exercise. That sounds crazy, huh? But it's true. I mean, when you exercise every day and you get used to it, but I'm not suggesting, like yesterday, I'm not suggesting that anybody go out here and exercise. If you haven't exercised in 5, 10, 30 years, do not get out there and try to do it because you will drop dead. Okay? Before you take up, if you have not exercised in a while, before you take up an exercise regimen, talk to your doctor. Okay? Talk to your doctor because he will tell you if exercise should be on your agenda. But anyway, if you can exercise, do it, because once you're, when you're exercising, it also not only tones your body, it also clears your mind. It helps you to think a lot better. I mean, it a lot clearer, if I can say a lot clearer. Okay, a lot clearer. Your cognitive signs will get better. You can avoid Alzheimer's. You can avoid dementia. Just exercise. And exercise, what, 15 minutes, 30 minutes a day? That's it. And watch your thinking apparatus get strong, if I could say it. But anyway, exercise is very, very important for everything that can go wrong with your body. You don't need to take a lot of medicine, a lot of prescriptions, because in the long run, that stuff is going to kill you. You know, exercise the pain away. Folks, that's all you have to do. Exercise the pain away. Walk for 30. You don't have to buy a $50 to $100 a month gym or go join some health club for $100 a month. Get out there and enjoy nature. Just walk for 30, 40 minutes a day. Hey, that's all to it. You know, if you have the time. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Follow me on Facebook, Blog Talk Radio right here. And it's fun, folks. It's still nice. It feels like springtime. Oh, wow. I'm so glad to be here. And I'm glad you're out there. All right. I can see you. I can see you on my screen. All right. So I know you're there. Okay. Scientists identified the first signs of Alzheimer's disease, which is basically losing your grip on reality. But we can avoid all of that if we just exercise, because I have a report here that says only 1 in 3 adults participate in exercise. Now, that's a shame. That's a shame. We're going to have a lot of dead people because these people are going to think that medication is an end to all ends. Yeah, it is. Totally. And I've said this before. When you're buying medication, you're just making the pharmaceuticals rich while they're keeping you sick. They profit from that. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. Let's go to see who we have here. Hi, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Go right ahead.
Hi, George. It's Mary Shores.
Hi, Mary Shores. And you are a motivational speaker.
I sure am.
No problem about that. Give my audience a little taste of your bio, and then we can get into it.
I'm not sure where to start. Okay, I'll tell you what. Well, I started my first company at 24 years old, and it was a very unlikely type of company for a 24-year-old woman. So it was a debt collection company.
Wow.
And I was the youngest person ever to open a debt collection agency and get licensing. From there, I got into personal development and sort of had this secret desire to be a motivational speaker. So I created this system out of a question that I had asked myself, which was, I wanted to know how I could make people happier at the end of the call than they were at the beginning of the call. So I ended up developing a system called Conscious Communications, which was really built on a mission that I have, that I want people to feel good about paying their debt. Because the reality is, George, that having a debt is a psychological burden, and it's a burden that becomes a barrier between people in debt and having their dreams. And
I totally,
so I really just wanted to get rid of that.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, I don't think I know anybody who has not been in debt, including myself. And it's not fun. It's no fun. It takes away all of your joy, especially when you're trying to duck and hide from debt collectors like yourself. And it is stressful. It is stressful when you owe money and you can't pay it. But I think a lot of people who I think most people want to pay their debts. I think they want to pay their bills, but they just can't. I mean, they don't have the wherewithal to do that.
They don't have the funding.
Yeah.
Right. George, it's interesting because, you know, we widely realize what it feels like to have a debt. But do you know it's also a psychological burden to be the creditor? For example, have you ever had a friend or a family member who owed you money?
Yes.
You still get that feeling. It's that still, you know, there's still that feeling. What does that feel like when they're avoiding you or they're not paying you?
Well, I'll tell you what
it
feels like.
That psychological burden.
I'll tell you what it feels like. It feels like they will never get anything else.
So you see how the psychological burden exists on both sides of the debt.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how I got my start. And then
From
there, I was able to write a book. And it's not a book about debt. It's a book about personal development. So it's called Conscious Communications, Your Step-by-Step Guide to Harness the Power of Your Words to Change Your Mind, Your Choices, and Your Life.
Wow, sounds great. I want to ask you a question. What does it take to be a motivational speaker?
Well, it takes a lot of courage, a lot of courage, and probably have some idea about what you want to talk about. So if you know something in your heart to be true and you can get that message out in a courageous and authentic way, then that's the first step. I also think there's some ability needed to be able to speak in front of people.
Mm-hmm.
And just the same courage it takes for you to be on the radio.
I think being a motivational speaker, you're trying to motivate people to try to better their lives, better themselves. And you, like you say, you do need a message that they are going to be able to relate to. But I don't think any motivational speaker can speak about anything that they themselves have not experienced. So I think you have to experience something traumatic in your life in order to go out there and tell people how to deal with it and how to bring themselves up out of that maybe stressfulness.
I agree completely. And I know in my own life, very mm-hmm. early on, so I was out on my own at 16 years old, lived mm-hmm. on my own throughout my senior year, got pregnant very early on at 19, had a child who was born traumatically brain damaged. She lived to be a year and a half, but I spent that year and a half in children's hospitals. And if you've ever been in a children's hospital, it's something you can't unsee. Once you've seen, the burn unit, the cancer unit, the families sleeping in the hallways and in the emergency room, waiting rooms, it's something that changes you as a person. And so I am no stranger to tragedy. And one of the biggest things that affected me in my life was going through a divorce in 2008. So I got a divorce. And for about 2 years after that, I really just felt like I could not get my mind and my body and my motivation to focus in alignment and to act in alignment with anything that I wanted. And so mm-hmm. that's one of the reasons that I'm really able to say that your feelings, your thoughts, your words, and your actions all need to be in alignment with what you want. Because so many times, I heard you talking about exercise. You know, so many times we say we want to be in shape, we say we want good health, but all of our behaviors are not in alignment with what we say we want.
Right.
And when you can get your feelings, thoughts, words, and actions in alignment with what you say you want, what you want will show up in your life so quickly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So tell us about your book.
Tell us about the book. So the book is a personal development book. And this book was a dream come true of mine. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I told you about the funk that I was in after my divorce. And I was really in just this daily habit of, I don't know, watching about 5 hours of YouTube a day, which was not really productive, as you can imagine. This video came on. It was Louise Hay, You Can Heal Your Life. And it was a 90-minute documentary about Louise Hay and her life. Now, at the time, I'd never heard of Louise Hay, and I'd never heard of Hay House. And I watched the documentary, and that documentary really did heal my life. So it was just this amazing story about Louise Hay, her life, the company she built. And if you're not familiar with Louise Hay, when she was 58 years old, she started her own company that's a publishing company, which is the company that is responsible for publishing people like Deepak Chopra, Wayne Dyer, Marianne Williamson, Gabby Bernstein. They just pump out one best-selling author after another. As a matter of fact, the majority of their authors have been on Oprah Soul Sunday, which is one of my favorite shows. So I just... Yeah. I'm watching this video and I got so much inner joy that sort of built up inside of me to the point that I remember jumping up and saying, Louise Hay is going to publish my book. And I immediately just sat down and started writing out book ideas. And then I did nothing. Because my mantra was, I want to write a book, but I'm not a writer. And that was my mantra for about 2 years. So you can see that my words were not in alignment with that goal. One day, it all changed. So in 2015, I was at a writer's workshop, and best-selling author and star of The Secret, Mike Dooley, was the keynote speaker at the workshop. And he said, if you are a speaker and you teach seminars or workshops, go ahead and record your speech, have it transcribed, and then work with an editor to turn it into a book. So I did exactly that. I immediately booked a Words That Work workshop at the EDC, which is Economic Development Center, in my town, Champaign, Illinois. And we recorded it. It was 4 hours long. And then I took that 4 hours and used it to write a proposal. But then what happened was that I realized quite at the last minute before I needed to turn my book proposal into Hay House that Hay House was not going to publish a business book because Hay House is the number one publisher of spiritual and personal growth and development books. So something inside of me, I needed to listen to my intuition that said, you have to change this book from business to personal development. So I took my very same outline, my very same ideas, which is Words That Work is all about number one, the negative self-talk. You know, we have a do not say list. There's a list of words we should never, ever say. Step two is replace it with words that work. Always be talking about what you do want instead of what you don't want. So for example, when I was saying, but I'm not a writer, that was the opposite of what I wanted to be true. And the third step is always, always focus on what you want and not what you don't want. So I took all of this information and changed it over to personal development, rewrote a book proposal in less than 2 months, turned it into Hay House, and got a book deal immediately from my first book proposal. It was a slam dunk.
Congratulations. That sounds like it was a slam dunk. And you sound like you got a powerful book there. It sounds like it's really, really powerful because you were, I mean, from what you're saying, basically, if I, you know, put it all in a nutshell, you were motivated by a motivational speaker and to get this book out.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. Louise Hay is a very powerful speaker.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I can say the same thing. I think I something similar has happened to me. I used to read a lot of motivational books by one of my favorite writers on motivation, Les Brown. Yeah, Les Brown. And I read his first and second books, and it was a paragraph or a passage in the book saying, you can be anything you want to be. If you want to write that book, write that book. And don't let anything stop you from writing that book. Remember, I was 7 years old and they thought I was crazy or something like that. But write that book, write that book. And he motivated me to write my first book because I was reading his books. And they were all about being the best you can be, being the best, being your best self. And I have to give him a lot of credit for my, you know, writing career today, because I read, and he's a motivational speaker, and I try to be one too. I don't know how effective I am, but anyway, he motivated me to write my first book. So I was also motivated by a motivator to be a better person.
I love that. I was motivated by a motivator to be a better person. That's tweetable, yeah. George.
Are you planning on writing another book?
I am. I'm in development, working on another book right now. Might call it Mind Body Business. Really want to focus on the connection between our minds and our mind and our body, and how our brain signals work to feed us instincts and intuition based on goals we have set. You know, there's all kinds of studies that show us that by having a goal, you're more likely to be successful. By writing it down, you're even more likely to make that goal.
Mm-hmm. How
but
are
did you know
how
there's
are,
a reason why?
Yeah, I was going to say, what kind of reactions are you getting from your book and the things that you do and your motivational speaking? What kind of reactions from other people are you getting?
I have gotten everything from early on in my speaking career. I'll never forget when someone wrote on the comment card, that was the longest 4 hours of my life. So that was years ago. But you know what? I was so thankful for it because I had to go back to the very same company the next day, because a lot of times when I do trainings corporate trainings, we'll have to train at the same company every day to get different people. And so because of that comment, I was able to go back and rewrite everything so that the next day, I learned so much from that. And then, on the other end of the spectrum, you know, the feeling that you get when someone tells you that you've changed their life is juices me.
Yeah, that's get you. I mean, when someone gives me positive feedback on the show or what I've written, that makes me just want to get out there and just work even harder, you know?
Absolutely. It juices you, and it gives you that internal energy to keep going.
Yeah. Mary, what can we find your book?
Well, the book is being published on August 22nd, and it will be available through Hay House and Amazon and hopefully local bookstores.
All righty. Can you give us a website? Maybe we can go to and find out some more information on what you're telling us.
So yes, absolutely. Right now, if you go to maryshores.com for your listeners, we have some free giveaways. And one of the most exciting things that we have going on right now is a 5-day growth challenge. It's called Dream with a Deadline. And all the listeners have to do is go to maryshores.com. There is a picture there. It says Dream with a Deadline. You click on it, you download it, and what you're going to get is a 26-page book for free that has a 5-day challenge on it. So what is also included in the challenge is an exclusive Facebook group. So there'll be a link there right in the book that you can click on to join the exclusive Facebook group. You can find an accountability buddy in the group, or you can just post your results every day. You don't even actually have to print out this book, because the worksheets and everything, you can actually fill them out right on your computer. So it makes it super easy. But the day one of the challenge is all about finding your focus. So it's going to take you through an exercise that's going to ask you specifically what you don't want to have going on in your life. And so, you know, we've got everybody making their list of the things in their life that they no longer want. And then we want to state instead, we want to affirm what we do want. You know, George, what's very interesting to me is that many people actually don't know what they want. And
agreed.
What do you want?
You know, I have a 17-year-old son. He doesn't know what he wants. So I agree with you.
I have a 15 and 16-year-old son. And yes, I understand that. So if you don't know what you want, we can take that list of your don't wants and we can say, what is the opposite of that? What is the opposite? So if someone says, I don't want to be broke, what's the opposite of broke?
Having money.
Having money, having abundance, being able to support yourself and your family. And, you know, just as Les Brown would say, all I'm trying to do is just support my family.
Yeah.
Support your family, support your dreams, have experiences in life. If you're single.
I was going to say marriage. I was going to say, ladies and gentlemen, Mary Shores on the George Wilder Jr. Show. She's a motivational speaker. Make sure you pick up her book. I mean, you know, I got to tout this because you've been so wonderful. And once the show is over and once it's podcasted, would you like a link to the show, to the show that you're on?
Would love to have it. Thank you.
Okay. I'll get it out there to you in a few hours after the show is podcast. Mary Shores, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, George. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, Mary Shores, motivational speaker and author on the George Wilder Jr. Show. We will be right back if I can find the right thing to click, ladies and gentlemen. Wow, this is a drum roll. All right, let's see what we can do.
I'm here today to talk about a disturbing question, which has an equally disturbing answer. My topic is the secrets of domestic violence. And the question I'm going to tackle is the one question everyone always asks. Why does she stay? Why would anyone stay with a man who beats her? I'm not a psychiatrist, a social worker, or an expert in domestic violence. I'm just one woman with a story to tell. I was 22. I had just graduated from Harvard College. I'd moved to New York City for my first job as a writer and editor at 17 Magazine. I had my first apartment, my first little green American Express card, and I had a very big secret. My secret was that I had this gun loaded with hollow point bullets pointed at my head by the man who I thought was my soulmate many, many times. The man who I loved more than anybody on earth held a gun to my head and threatened to kill me more times than I can even remember. I'm here to tell you the story of crazy love, a psychological trap disguised as love, one that millions of women and even a few men fall into every year. It may even be your story. I don't look like a typical domestic violence survivor. I have a BA in English from Harvard College, an MBA in marketing from Wharton Business School. I spent most of my career working for Fortune 500 companies, including Johnson & Johnson, Leo Burnett, and The Washington Post. I've been married for almost 20 years to my second husband, and we have three kids together. My dog is a black lab, and I drive a Honda Odyssey minivan. So my first message for you is that domestic violence happens to everyone. All races, all religions, all income and education levels. It's everywhere. And my second message is that everyone thinks domestic violence happens to women, that it's a women's issue. Not exactly. Over 85% of abusers are men. And domestic abuse happens only in intimate, interdependent, long-term relationships. In other words, in families. The last place we would want or expect to find violence, which is one reason domestic abuse is so confusing. I would have told you myself that I was the last person on earth who would stay with a man who beats me. But in fact, I was a very typical victim because of my age. I was 22. And in the United States, women ages 16 to 24 are three times as likely to be domestic violence victims as women of other ages. And over 500 women and girls this age are killed every year by abusive partners, boyfriends, and husbands in the United States. I was also a very typical victim because I knew nothing about domestic violence, its warning signs, or its patterns. I met Connor on a cold, rainy January night. He sat next to me on the New York City subway, and he started chatting me up. He told me two things. One was that he, too, had just graduated from an Ivy League school, and that he worked at a very impressive Wall Street bank. But what made the biggest impression on me that first meeting was that he was smart and funny, and he looked like a farm boy. He had these big cheeks, these big apple cheeks, and this wheat blonde hair, and he seemed so sweet. One of the smartest things Connor did from the very beginning was to create the illusion that I was the dominant partner in the relationship. He did this, especially at the beginning, by idolizing me. We started dating, and he loved everything about me, that I was smart, that I'd gone to Harvard, that I was passionate about helping teenage girls and my job. He wanted to know everything about my family and my childhood, my hopes and dreams. Connor believed in me as a writer and a woman in a way that no one else ever had. And he also created a magical atmosphere of trust between us by confessing his secret, which was that as a very young boy, starting at age 4, he had been savagely and repeatedly physically abused by his stepfather. And the abuse had gotten so bad that he had had to drop out of school in 8th grade, even though he was very smart. And he'd spent almost 20 years rebuilding his life, which is why that Ivy League degree and the Wall Street job and his bright, shiny future meant so much to him. If you had told me that this smart, funny, sensitive man who adored me would one day dictate whether or not I wore makeup, how short my skirts were, where I lived, what jobs I took, who my friends were, and where I spent Christmas, I would have laughed at you. Because there was not a hint of violence or control or anger in Connor at the beginning. I didn't know that the first stage in any domestic violence relationship is to seduce and charm the victim. I also didn't know that the second step is to isolate the victim. Now, Connor did not come home one day and announce, you know, hey, all this Romeo and Juliet stuff has been great, but I need to move into the next phase where I isolate you and I abuse you. So I need to get you out of this apartment where the neighbors can hear you scream and out of this city where you have friends and family and coworkers who can see the bruises. Instead, Connor came home one Friday evening and he told me that he had quit his job that day, his dream job. And he said that he had quit his job because of me, because I had made him feel so safe and loved that he didn't need to prove himself on Wall Street anymore. And he just wanted to get out of the city and away from his abusive, dysfunctional family and move to a tiny town in New England where he could start his life over with me by his side. Now, the last thing I wanted to do was leave New York and my dream job. But I thought you made sacrifices for your soulmate. So I agreed, and I quit my job, and Connor and I left Manhattan together. I had no idea I was falling into crazy love, that I was walking headfirst into a carefully laid physical, financial, and psychological trap. The next step in the domestic violence pattern is to introduce the threat of violence and see how she reacts. And here's where those guns come in. As soon as we moved to New England, you know that place where Connor was supposed to feel so safe? He bought 3 guns. He kept one in the glove compartment of our car. He kept one under the pillows on our bed. And the third one he kept in his pocket at all times. And he said that he needed those guns because of the trauma he'd experienced as a young boy. He needed them to feel protected. But those guns were really a message for me. And even though he hadn't raised a hand to me, my life was already in grave danger every minute of every day. Connor first physically attacked me 5 days before our wedding. It was 7 a.m. I still had on my nightgown. I was working on my computer trying to finish a freelance writing assignment, and I got frustrated. And Connor used my anger as an excuse to put both of his hands around my neck and to squeeze so tightly that I could not breathe or scream. And he used the chokehold to hit my head repeatedly against the wall. 5 days later, the 10 bruises on my neck had just faded, and I put on my mother's wedding dress, and I married him. Despite what had happened, I was sure we were going to live happily ever after, because I loved him, and he loved me so much. And he was very, very sorry. He had just been really stressed out by the wedding and by becoming a family with me. It was an isolated incident, and he was never going to hurt me again. It happened twice more on the honeymoon. The first time, I was driving to find a secret beach, and I got lost. And he punched me in the side of my head so hard that the other side of my head repeatedly hit the driver's side window. And then a few days later, driving home from our honeymoon, he got frustrated by traffic, and he threw a cold Big Mac in my face. Connor proceeded to beat me once or twice a week for the next 2.5 years of our marriage. I was mistaken in thinking that I was unique and alone in this situation. 1 in 3 American women experiences domestic violence or stalking at some point in her life. And the CDC reports that 15 million children are abused every year. 15 million. So actually, I was in very good company. Back to my question. Why did I stay? The answer is easy. I didn't know he was abusing me. Even though he held those loaded guns to my head, pushed me downstairs, threatened to kill our dog, pulled the key out of the car ignition as I drove down the highway, poured coffee grinds on my head as I dressed for a job interview, I never once thought of myself as a battered wife. Instead, I was a very strong woman in love with a deeply troubled man, and I was the only person on earth who could help Connor face his demons. The other question everybody asks is, why doesn't she just leave? Why didn't I walk out? I could have left any time. To me, this is the saddest and most painful question that people ask. Because we victims know something you usually don't. It's incredibly dangerous to leave an abuser. Because the final step in the domestic violence pattern is kill her. Over 70% of domestic violence murders happen after the victim has ended the relationship, after she's gotten out, because then the abuser has nothing left to lose. Other outcomes include long-term stalking, even after the abuser remarries, denial of financial resources, and manipulation of the family court system to terrify the victim and her children, who are regularly forced by family court judges to spend unsupervised time with the man who beat their mother. And still we ask, why doesn't she just leave? I was able to leave because of one final sadistic beating that broke through my denial. I realized that the man who I loved so much was going to kill me if I let him. So I broke the silence. I told everyone. The police, my neighbors, my friends and family, total strangers. And I'm here today because you all helped me. We tend to stereotype victims as grisly headlines, self-destructive women, damaged goods. The question, why does she stay, is code for some people for it's her fault for staying. As if victims intentionally choose to fall in love with men intent upon destroying us. But since publishing Crazy Love, I have heard hundreds of stories from men and women who also got out, who learned an invaluable life lesson from what happened, and who rebuilt lives, joyous, happy lives, as employees, wives, and mothers, lives completely free of violence, like me. Because it turns out that I'm actually a very typical domestic violence victim and a typical domestic violence survivor. I remarried a kind and gentle man. We have those three kids. I have that black lab, and I have that minivan. What I will never have again, ever, is a loaded gun held to my head by someone who says that he loves me. Now, right now, maybe you're thinking, wow, this is fascinating. Or, wow, how stupid was she? But this whole time, I've actually been talking about you. I promise you, there are several people listening to me right now who are currently being abused, or who were abused as children, or who are abusers themselves. Abuse could be affecting your daughter, your sister, your best friend right now. I was able to end my own crazy love story by breaking the silence. I'm still breaking the silence today. It's my way of helping other victims. And it's my final request of you. Talk about what you heard here. Abuse thrives only in silence. You have the power to end domestic violence simply by shining a spotlight on it. We victims need everyone. We need every one of you to understand the secrets of domestic violence. Show abuse the light of day by talking about it with your children, your coworkers, your friends and family. Recast survivors as wonderful, lovable people with full futures. Recognize the early signs of violence and conscientiously intervene, de-escalate it, show victims a safe way out. Together, we can make our beds, our dinner tables, and our families the safe and peaceful oases they should be. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that. That was great. I'm going to try to get that in anytime that I can on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Oh, that was great. That was wonderful. Let's see if we can't do this.
The George Wilder Jr. Show, the talk of our time,
right,
is now on the air. Welcome, everybody.
Welcome, everybody. All right, I guess everybody has heard about this wiretapping thing that Trump is accusing Obama of wiretapping, which is a total lie because Trump cannot come up with any proof or evidence for Congress because he's ordered them to investigate this, but they can't investigate something without any proof. I mean, what they need proof. They need names. They need places. They need, you know, something to go on, basically. And Trump also accused Obama of letting prisoners go on Gitmo. And that's false. That was my understanding. That was under George W. Bush, Guantanamo Bay, Gitmo. He's accusing. Now, that's the second lie. He's and I don't know why Obama. I'm hearing Obama is pissed off and angry at Trump for especially talking about him, accusing him of wiretapping his Trump, the Trump building, the Trump Tower, when as president, presidents do not have the power to wiretap. It's the FBI and the Department of Justice who has that power. And he's saying Obama ordered these guys to tap his phones, which is not true, because the head FBI director and the guy who's in charge of who would be overseeing any type of thing like this, like wiretapping of someone, would know. And they are denying this. They're denying it. And Trump is still doubling down. Obama did it. He did it. You know, if that was me, if Trump was lying on me like that, I would not be laying back like Obama and saying nothing. I would have to come out and say something, you know, because there's people out there who believed he actually done this and he had no authority to do this. You know, it's, and the Republicans are saying that Trump is lying. We all know he's lying. We all know there's no proof, because if Trump had proof of Barack Obama wiretapping his one of his buildings, he would have shown it by now. He has no proof. The people around him are trying to do their best in trying to find some proof to accuse Obama. They're trying to just ruin this guy. They done took away his legacy. They want to see him ruined. And maybe this is Obama's fault, because Obama's been too nice to these guys. And they just, you know, step on him. But Trump is out here saying that Obama wiretapped him, and everybody else is saying, no, he didn't. He did not do that. He doesn't have the power to do that. He cannot order. No president can order wiretappings on another American citizen. And Obama said he would never have done that anyway. But I'm hearing that, once again, I'm hearing that he is totally pissed off at Trump. late night shows and the comedy shows are having a field day with this. There's Trump and Obama finally chat about wiretapping, this wiretapping thing on Conan O'Brien. This is a windfall for these Saturday Night Live, Jimmy Kimmel, Jimmy Fallon, all of these guys. This is a windfall for their comedy show, you know, the Daily Show. I mean, the Trump administration is giving these comedy shows and all these guys a lot of material. A lot of material, maybe too much material, more material than they can ask for. Anyway, Alec Baldwin says he's going to hang it up playing Donald Trump. He says because of all of the malicious that's going around. So he's going to hang it up. And if he does hang it up, he's giving up a lot of money. And if he does hang it up, I don't know why he wants to do that. I guess he just don't want to be stereotyped. That's a good way of doing it. He doesn't want to be stereotyped. But if he's hanging it up because of all the haters, they're going to hate him anyway after he hangs it up, after he quit playing Trump. And if he does hang it up and decide that he really doesn't want to play Trump anymore, somebody else is going to come along and do it. And, you know, so it's you know, I mean, that's up to him if he wants to do that. Maybe he's tired of doing it. Anyway, I'm looking at Steve Bannon. This guy looks like what he is. He looks like Bane from Batman. He's in the White House. He's probably telling Trump what to do and not to do. He's probably actually the actual president of the White House. The voice of Steve Bannon, Breitbart News Daily. This is where Trump, I'm hearing, got his news that Barack Obama tapped his wires. That's the way he tweeted it. Tap my wires. That is something. All right, you've been listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. We'll get into more of this later on. We're going to do something. We're going to do Keith right here.
I'm Keith Olbermann, and this is The Resistance. Trump has promised a news conference Wednesday. I'll believe it when I see it. He has every reason to cancel it or simply ignore his promise. The trick worked with the news conference about his wife's reported immigration irregularities. The trick worked with the news conference he scheduled for December 15th to address his potential business conflicts of interest. The trick worked when he promised for last Tuesday or Wednesday revelations about Russia's hacking of the election. Of course, Trump has broken his promise. It's a Trump promise. But this news conference is designed as, and here is my favorite word again, chaff, to deflect from the now four confirmation hearings Trump and his Senate monkey Mitch McConnell have scheduled for the same day, including the confirmation of a nominee who had not yet been vetted by the ethics office, DeVos at Education, including the confirmation of the man who defines the corporate globalism Trump himself specifically denounced as recently as December 1st, Secretary of State nominee Rex Tillerson, who's actually a resident of the nation of Exxon. To deflect from these real problems, Tillerson is like the John Houseman and Ned Beatty characters from the movies Rollerball and Network. Trump has to say something outrageous, to start a new flimsy controversy at a news conference, to lie about somebody, to dig up a new scapegoat, to find a way to attack Hillary Clinton, or NBC, or me, or you. But Trump's handlers have a problem. His increasingly self-destructive statements about Russia and hacking and the Putin WikiLeaks scandal have suggested Trump is losing what little self-control he still has, and that there is every reason to suppose that instead of providing chaff to protect Tillerson and the rest of this gang of pirates he has nominated, he will instead reveal something impeachable about himself. Again, like he did at his last news conference, if only the country had fully understood it at the time. There is a specific reason Trump has not held a news conference since the 27th of July last year. It is because on that day he inadvertently eliminated the need to prove that his campaign knew in advance that Russia was hacking American computers for the specific purpose of putting him in as its puppet in the White House. After that July 27th news conference, proof of that was no longer needed. We instead had solicitation of an identical crime. That was the day he asked Russia to hack American computers for him personally. He was asked about Russia and the hacking that had already been done, and instead he answered about Russia and the hacking he would like to see.
And if it is Russia, which is probably not, nobody knows who it is, but if it is Russia, it's really bad for a different reason, because it shows how little respect they have for our country when they would hack into a major party and get everything. But it would be interesting to see. I will tell you this. Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing. I think you will probably be rewarded mightily by our press. Let's see if that happens.
And in the same news conference, the follow-up question from my pal Katie Turr, no less.
That's up to the president. Let the president talk to him. Look, here's the problem. Here's the problem, Katie. Katie, here's the problem. Very simple. He has no respect.
She then references his call to have them release 30,000 Hillary Clinton emails. He resumes, quote, well, they probably have them. I'd like to have them released. She is incredulous. Does that not give you pause? He resumes because even then he could not leave it alone.
No, gives me no pause. If they have them, they have them. We might as well find. Hey, you know what gives me more pause? That a person in our government, crooked Hillary Clinton, here's what gives me more. Be quiet. I know you want to, you know, save her. That a person in our government, Katie, would delete or get rid of 33,000 emails. That gives me a big problem. After she gets a subpoena, she gets subpoenaed, and she gets rid of 33,000 emails. That gives me a problem. Now, if Russia or China, or any other country has those emails, I mean, to be honest with you, I'd love to see them.
This, in retrospect, was an inducement to a foreign power to enact espionage against citizens of the United States of America. They have not let him hold a news conference since. If Trump really shows up and he is asked anything about anything except Russia, except what he said about Russia, if the thing is wasted by question after question about Meryl Streep, then every reporter who speaks at this news conference should leave the profession if journalism still exists under Trump. Because not only is the subject of Trump's disloyalty to this country essential to our continued existence as a nation, but there's no work involved either. The damned questions are just lying there in the quotes from the last news conference. Resist. Peace.
All right, that was someone who sent me that clip on domestic violence, and I always try to get that in onto the show because it's very important. It's one of the best talks I've heard about on domestic violence. That's why I try to always share it, because it's one of the things that's going on around America and around the world that should be addressed. And at one time, they was talking about a law enacted in Congress forbidding it under Republican rule. That never came to fruition. So this is the George Wilder Jr. Show. Thank you for listening, folks. Thanks to my guest, Mary Shores, motivational speaker, and all of that. And we're going to try and have her back. She was just so great, so wonderful, and so nice, and sharing so much with us. And that's always appreciated on the George Wilder Jr. Show. Okay, I have something here on the screen. I'm going to try and read it. If you speak and others don't hear, it's not that they don't listen. It's that you have failed to resonate. Yeah, I can agree with you. Even if you're a radio show, talk show host, or a television talk show host, if you're speaking are not hearing, then you're not resonating with them. You have to resonate with your audience, or they're going to turn you off quick. I mean, because you're asking them for your time, for their time. And if you have to really, really try to give them something worth listening to. All right. Yeah. Wow. I'm looking at Ben Carson right here on my screen, folks. Ben Carson, the nuttiest man in the world. He's been appointed to the federal housing. I think it's HUD. Urban and development, and he doesn't know jack of what he's doing. This man is crazy. He's going around making these idiotic speeches, saying this stupid ass stuff, and getting away with it. Appointed by Donald Trump, his master. You know, so this guy is awful. I said some things. Every time I speak of him, I just say awful things about him, because he tries to indoctrinate Americans with that crazy and stupidness that he comes up with. Ben Carson, Dr. Ben Carson, a neurosurgeon. Well, he's a brain surgeon in need of a brain surgeon. Put it that way. All right, you've been listening to George Wilder Jr. Show. We're going to listen to Martin Luther King's last speech, about 3 minutes worth of it. Here we go.
All we say to America is be true to what you said on paper. If I lived in China or even Russia or any totalitarian country, maybe I could understand some of these illegal injunctions. Maybe I could understand the denial of certain basic First Amendment privileges, because they haven't committed themselves to that over there. But somewhere I read of the freedom of assembly. Somewhere I read of the freedom of speech. Somewhere I read of the freedom of press. Somewhere I read that the greatness of America is the right to protest far right. So just as I say, we aren't going to let any dogs or water hoses turn us around we aren't going to let any injunction turn us around. Well, I don't know what will happen now. We've got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop. I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place. But I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will. And he's allowed me to go up to the mountain. And I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we as a people will get to the promised land. So I'm happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Oh, wow. His speeches are so riveting. That's just a little bit of it, of that speech, his last speech, Martin Luther King speech. And I'm actually playing it because it's left over from Black History Month. Last month, February, and I thought I'd play a little taste of it because it's always so jarring and so exciting and so thrilling to hear him speak. And he's gone now. He's gone. He was assassinated, and we still have his speeches. We still have his books, his essays, his letters, so we can always go look at those things. Martin Luther King on the George Wilder Jr. Show. All right, let's move right along. We talked about Ben Carson, the Republicans. They came up with a health care bill that a lot of people replacing. They came up with a health care bill that they want to replace Obamacare with. And they are touting that it's one of the greatest things ever. But everybody else is saying, no, we don't want it. Take it back. It's not good. Even Trump is out there saying it's a wonderful bill. And the doctors association said, no, this is crap. This is totally crap. He doesn't know what he's doing. Trump is winging it day from day. Every day he's learning on the job. You know, he's White House 101 Trump. Because, I mean, seriously, the guy doesn't know what he's doing. But he's doing it anyway. He doesn't think about the ramifications of what he's doing. If he thought about the ramifications of what he's doing, he probably wouldn't do it as hasty, as fast, as quick, trying to say he's getting things done. And as for building a wall, we're going to be paying for it. The taxpayers are going to be paying for it. They already are cutting so many programs in Washington, D.C. to find the money to build a wall, which is crazy, which is stupid. They're going to be cutting every program there is, vital programs, security programs. They're already trying to slash jobs at the airports. You know, that's crazy. You build a wall, but you're going to let terrorists in. That's nutty. You know, these people don't know what they're doing. And Congress is going right along with them because what did I tell you yesterday? Everything is being ran by Republicans. So it's going to take the voices of the people to try to make some changes, some radical changes, some rational changes also, because that's all we have now. Republicans are running everything. They are in the state houses. They're in everything. They're tearing everything apart. And they're saying that it's good for the country. That's something, right? Tearing everything apart, breaking everything up, ending social programs, but it's good for America. We're making America great again. BS, bullshit. That ain't happening, folks. Don't let these people fool you. It's all about what they want. It's not what you want or what I want. It's what the Republicans in Congress, it's what they want. It's all about what they want, not what you want, not what I want. All right. It is still nice outside. It's great outside. It's wonderful outside. And we're just about off the air. I think we got about 3 more minutes left into the show. We're going to do this, folks. Be right back.
Heaven help the child who never had a home. Heaven help the girl who walks the streets alone. Heaven help the roses if the bombs begin to fall. Heaven help the black man if he struggles one more day. Heaven help the white man if he turns back away. Heaven help the man who kicks the man who has a crawl. Heaven help us all.
The Junior Show. I hope you guys join me tomorrow. It was fun. It was great. I love it. And thanks to my guest, the honorable, I don't know why I'm saying honorable, the incomparable, that's more like it, the incomparable Mary Shores on the George Wilder Junior Show, talking motivational speaking, and among other things. It was a great conversation. What do you think, folks? Make sure you join me tomorrow on the 6 o'clock straight up, 7:30 ending time, 8 o'clock ending time. You know, I'm on Monday through Thursday all the time, you know. So even if I'm not on, something may happen. You can always podcast a show, listen to a podcast, a recorded podcast. They're always there. I think it's about 300 of them. Choose any one of them, folks. They're great. So I want to say thanks, everybody, for listening. Thanks for tuning in. I hope to see you tomorrow. Bye-bye, everybody.